Okay, now we're live. Apparently, it helps if you count off five when you start. Hello, everyone. Dark Journalist, it's great to have everyone here. And somebody's audio. I guess it's your audio, Olivia. Is it? Or is it mine? Is it mine? Hold on just a second. There we go. Is that better?
Wow, there's a serious delay. What is that, like a 10-second delay?
But the point is, now it's gone. Is it?
Okay, yeah.
Now we're in good shape. And we have Alexander Bruce with us from Forbidden Knowledge TV. Alexander, how are you?
Howdy, ha.
Right off the bat, Alexander, I have to ask you about the James O'Keefe Twitter investigation, undercover sting. And we've learned some things about what's going on there at Twitter, which is they're basically tilting the field in the direction of their own political directives and leaving the alternative media in the dust. So before we get to the big picture tonight about UFOs, the Mandela effect, which is something that's in this whole disinformation surge that we're seeing and that we're going to cover tonight, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, it confirms every nightmare I ever had, because similar information has also been gathered about Google and Facebook. Mm-hmm. And so you have these Silicon Valley millennial people. And what I'd like to understand is if there's a mandate, if there's any kind of a government mandate that they're following, or, you know, or if this is just completely, you know, just their own volition. But so what we're hearing is that they're literally filtering out keywords that they construe as redneck.
Right.
But they have such a narrow view, or, you know, first of all, you know, it's incredible. I think, you know, it's become, you know, white people are becoming extinct in America. They're going the way of the dinosaur. And maybe one day people will understand that they're a species that's going extinct, and maybe you want to save the whale, you know? Why is it okay to bury a demographic like that? It's very interesting.
Well, what kind of a corporate mandate is behind that? You know, when this Davos crowd gets together and they hang out, the Facebook Zuckerberg is there, the Twitter guys are there, and Snapchat people, and they're figuring out how to do these things because they lost control in the 2016 election, and basically the people's voice got heard. Somehow
I definitely, you know, my experience, you know, like it's very gratifying for me to see this very explicitly uncovered by James O'Keefe, because, you know, I used to make a great living with Google ads, and my income went down 90% from one month to the next. And I was getting 1.2 million page views per month. And, I was fired without any warning. You know, while I kept working without any kind of recourse or any explanation. And I'm a liberal. I'm somebody who's only voted Democrat. I'm from the North. I'm a completely, all my friends are black. You know what I'm saying? I'm right. Like the most liberal person. So.
But it's amazing, because what happens if you were a liberal, say 10 years ago, and you were here, the way that this, you know, the kind of surface of the political spectrum has shifted, you now are almost like a conservative. Because, you know, it's amazing, this throwover into this other place. And, you know, that is the part, that is the corporation attitude taking over, though, isn't it?
I don't know that it's that, is it that I'm not liberal anymore in a world where people can marry their computer or a tree or something? Is that what you're saying?
You're going deep on transhumanism now. We haven't even started.
or is it that, you know, whatever I am really is liberal, and whatever they are is fascist? Because it's corporatism. That's what it is.
Right.
It's exactly what Benito Mussolini called corporatism, is when you have, you know, private companies like Google and Facebook, these humongous companies that are bigger, you know, in revenue than many countries in the world, and that are enmeshed, have been enabled, are absolutely meshed with the national security establishment. of the United States. This is fascism.
Yeah. Well, the corporations make out like a bandit. They get people on the ground who are conscious of this to struggle over things like, oh, is this guy who's posting anonymously on a board, you know, shouldn't we be following him? And they forget about the whole track of the political structure. And the corporations just move back. They have more and more control, and they sort of play people off against each other. I definitely think that O'Keefe's investigation, now he's done a series of investigations, and he obviously is coming from a conservative point of view. But these investigations that he's done are such hardcore journalism, and we get to see the face, just like when CNN was saying, you know, let's trump up this whole Russian thing against Trump. Look, if you have legitimate issues with Trump as a news organization, you can go after him legitimately on those. But, you know, you don't want to fake information and just go after him that way. That's not a legitimate thing. And we also know that they created the whole fake news thing that boomeranged on them as soon as the election was over. So I'm more and more I'm seeing this, especially since the Davos meetings this weekend. We're looking at it as it's becoming more and more the people on the ground versus the corporations.
Right. And the thing is, and then you have the people who really are in lockstep, who really do adhere to follow the mainstream media and have forever when they were saying that 9/11 was 19 hijackers with plastic box cutters. They believed that. What I find interesting, and I keep saying this, I'll never stop saying this, is, I'm not a Trump fan, but, where was the outrage with Bush? The outrage you see against Trump right now is so outsized compared to Bush, where 9/11 happened on his watch. We went to war illegally, killed over 1 million people in Iraq, and on and on. And not to mention over 5,000 Americans and just the trillions of waste, you know, that just lined the pockets of his friends. Where is the outrage against those people, the neocons and W? Mm-hmm. You know, how does Trump, what does impeach Trump for what? Mm-hmm. You know, he's just like a silly buffoon. I mean, he's not dangerous. It's like W and that. Those people are dangerous.
Yeah, the Bushes and the Clintons certainly represent a much more criminal element in politics. There's no question about it. And I would say the Bushes leading the show and the Clintons a close second. But that is fascinating. But we have to get into the mind of this corporate mentality for a moment, because as we know, you know, for example, the Apple factories in China, when they had the workers working their 19-hour shifts or whatever, they would get so depressed that they'd want to jump out the window. And the response to the team, you know, on the Apple side wasn't to give these guys counseling or a day off or something like that. They built suicide nets outside of the factory, so when they jumped out, they didn't die. This is the mentality. You can see it there. And I think that there's kind of a cycle of disrespect between the corporations and the people on the ground. And if they don't balance that out, then, you know, you're looking at a situation, I think, which becomes steadily intolerable. Because the way a lot of the corporations see America is as just another enterprise zone that they can get into. They don't understand, you know, it's a sovereign country. And whatever else you could say it came out of the 2016 election, the idea of America first, make America great again, was a nationalist statement, which you saw picked up in other countries. And there were some movements in England, of course. They had that going on, and they still haven't fully implemented what people voted in. And, you know, so I think we're seeing that swing, and those corporations are just trying to figure out how to put that cat back in the bag, because they were doing so well before 2016.
Right. But, you know, the thing that I find really confusing are the many people who are buying into their narrative, which seems to be a majority. I mean, if you believe, I don't know, because I don't really surround, actually they're in my family. So yeah, most of my family members, if not all, believe, you know, are following that narrative. You know, Trump is dangerous, and
yeah, they've been brainwashed on that level. And but it's interesting, because I've pointed out on numerous occasions that in the independent media, for example, Trump has overwhelming support. I'd say over 90%. And you know, this is interesting, because that piece there, that alternative media piece, the independent media, is the part that put Trump over the top in the 2016 election. I'm absolutely convinced of it. but not so much by being even pro-Trump, which a good chunk of it was, but by exposing the Clintons so badly and really showing up what they were doing. And, you know, I mean, the things that you ran on your channel were very, I think, really drove a lot of traffic on the internet about this also. And
yeah, my thing was not pro-Trump, it was anti-Hillary.
Exactly. That's a really good point, because, you know, they didn't give us an opportunity to have a fair election because they took Bernie out of the picture, right? And that was the whole point behind that. So I think that Clintons got their just desserts, and then the deep state looked at that and said, we didn't expect this. And they tried their best to put Trump in a box. So it's a very cagey situation. And I think that they're wasting a lot of time and taxpayer money with the Mueller probe, and there's nothing there that they can use. And, you know, if you want to, like I said, if you want to go after a political figure for issues, go after him on a legitimate front. Don't try this backdoor avenue where you're trying to get deep elements of the CIA and the FBI together to gang up on this basically kind of independent president. Because even the Republicans, as we've seen, don't really support him a whole heck of a lot, especially the McCains and the Lindsey Graham.
That's the establishment person, regardless. In fact, I was in a conversation the other day with two people who had been one a lifetime Democrat and the other a lifetime Republican, and each voted for the opposite party this last time, which says a lot, I think.
Wow.
Because the Republican was like an establishment person. Oh, your camera just went out of focus.
Hey, I'm back.
Yeah.
It'll do that once in a while. Don't let it freak you out.
All right. And I guess, you know, somebody, I guess, who has the original spirit of what it is to be a Democrat is fighting for enfranchisement, you know, for free speech and real liberalism, not fascism, not digital fascism.
Well, you feel, I mean, with ForbiddenKnowledgeTV.net, for example, you know, you've seen different types of flagging. You've seen different types of, you know, where your site has fallen into this Google kind of web and labyrinth where it's hard to get information out. How much targeting do you think these corporations, just by algorithms, do on sites like yours?
Tremendous amount. I mean, on so many levels. I notice, what was the keyword that did it last week? I had something go into spam for the first time in a few months in one of my Gmail accounts, and people, all of a sudden I got a lot of complaints. My links weren't working, and the links were fine. They were just, something weird was happening. And these are, you know, it can be maybe innocent. This seemed to be something where Microsoft was reacting and seeing something as spam or seeing something as dangerous. But you can see how maybe something like that can be used as an excuse and as a means of filtering material, you know, information.
Yeah, it is very fascinating. They have to find a way to control the algorithms around this. And that brings us in a little bit to the Q information, because the Q stuff, which popped up on these boards a couple of months ago, started to become the one-stop shop for all these issues. You know, it had done that thing where it had incorporated all these alternative media memes into this one chat board. And so when you were typing up something, you might type up link between autism and vaccines, and boom, you know, you're getting driven over there. Do you think that these projects could exist to actually hijack your search traffic to go into these plots? Because we're already looking.
I think that's absolutely what Google's doing. Yes. I mean, they've admitted as much. That guy, the new CEO, said they're going to filter it, and they're going to choose themselves, you know, unilaterally what is true, which is a very neocon approach to things.
Yeah, so much for open democracy and digital democracy and all that kind of a thing.
It's really, to me, it's shocking, you know, as someone who was a liberal Democrat my whole life, you know, like, this is what it's like when the liberals are in charge. And so, you know, when the liberals become the establishment, they're just censoring fascists like, you know, I guess anyone else, you know, or maybe even more in your face. It really looks in your face, and I feel completely betrayed, you know, because, and I feel very estranged from, you know, it's like the changeling, you know, I don't even recognize what I, you know, the thing that I identify with. So yeah, it's been very, it's been monstrous. It's been a really monstrous experience.
I think it's important. 2018 has to be the year that we take a deep look at what the corporations are doing. The next thing they're going to do is run one of these corporate guys, maybe a Howard Schultz or even a Zuckerberg or somebody like that. And they're really going to try to control that next election because they feel like they dropped the ball in 2016. And that's going to be bad news. And nobody covers the elections like you do. So I know 2018, those congressional elections and all that stuff, it's going to be a big switchover. So people really stay on top of the Forbidden Knowledge TV for that, because that's going to be great. So we grabbed a little bit of that. You know, the name of the episode is UFO Mandela Effect. And the reason I mention this is, you know, it's a Mandela effect, as we know, is this thing that popped up, which is that originally Nelson Mandela was reported dead on a few different occasions. And it's this idea of kind of altering history and altering things that we know of in the past. And
now we're in a different timeline. We're in a parallel universe from the one we started out in.
Right.
I love when that came out, I was so psyched because the first book I ever wrote was about parallel universes where people I was interviewing were saying that this was real. And it was really happening. So this is because I really dove in deep so long ago. It got in so deep with sort of new age conspiracy type people. I just don't have a lot of patience for it anymore. I really, really don't.
Well, you know, the real from the nonsense. That's the thing. I think that's the determining factor. And the real is a very thin slice. And the nonsense is like this, you know. Yeah. And we know certain cable stations love to run that nonsense.
That's right.
But I will say this. Well, there was one more, though. It was like the Berenstain Bears, right? That was the classic one that got everyone talking. Yeah. And this, you know, people remembered it as either Berenstain Bears or Berenstain.
Yeah, there was a scene with Luke Skywalker, you know, Luke, I'm your father. And I forgot, it's like a slightly different line. And I think it's just because in the later editions of the Star Wars films, they changed them.
Well, this is an interesting thing. 90% of what they put out as the Mandela effect now is completely nonsense. Like they have the JFK one where they say, originally there were four people in the car, not six, you know, but anybody who's looked at that, of course, it was always six. So let's not get into that. It's funny. You know, what happens is these things take on a life of their own. However, I will say this, which is I've talked to people who get into this kind of, you know, deep idea about physics. And they say that it could be that somebody's experimenting there with the medium. That is, the perception itself changes history. And that's where we get into UFO Mandela effect. And I'll explain it now. So we had the Tom DeLonge reveal with, To the Stars Academy. I'm going to release all this stuff. Then this strange character came forward, Luis Elizondo, who, by the way, has dropped out of the media spotlight like a rock. And it's very fascinating because he was, you know, I mean, I expected him to show up on the cover of Vogue. I mean, he was everywhere for a while. You know, it's like Luis Elizondo, the disgruntled, you know, ex-insider who's come out to tell us about UFOs. And you made a very interesting point, which is right off the bat, they had this stage photograph of him in a cafe brooding, you know, like, oh, if I could only get the UFO truth out and all that. So that whole operation was incredibly staged. And I do feel like, when we're dealing with this, we have to understand that they put these figures out and it's market testing. It's something that doesn't work very well. They pull it or they lower its profile. That's the way it works. And we saw immediately with the DeLonge thing, when he came out with Academy to the Stars, the rollout was so bad that he doubled down and he went on Joe Rogan. And it was this terrible performance on Joe Rogan. Though across the board, people were like, this guy doesn't know anything about UFOs. What's going on here? Like, this is
really pilloried. By Joe Rogan. I saw subsequent Joe Rogan episodes where he was just trash savaging Tom DeLonge.
Yes, exactly. And it is interesting because it seemed like he was kind of swallowing, you know, biting his tongue when he was dealing with him, because he just was saying things that were ridiculous. Like, you know, the CIA and military intelligence came to get me because they knew I had read some books. You know, it didn't make any sense. It's ridiculous.
Right. It turns out, and curiously, that Joe Rogan had been reading UFO books his whole life too.
Right.
And had UFO posters in his bedroom when he was a kid and all that stuff.
Yeah, a lot of us read the books. I mean, the CIA hasn't pulled us into a room to say, we want you to start this company to reveal UFOs. It doesn't work that way. But I do feel like that's a whole operation. But one of the things that grabbed me about it initially, and in podcasts and things, I've talked about this when I've been interviewed about DeLong, which is when they came out with it at first, they came out with this idea, DeLong said that the CIA were the good guys. Now, subsequently, I've seen a number of scenarios roll out that have this exact same idea. And I feel like the CIA is trying to get the memory slate cleaned, you know, get that memory hole going. Let's work this out. And so we see a lot of things and a lot of operations that they've been a part of in the past, the JFK assassination. There's been so much information about that. Well, as soon as the JFK files were released in October 27th, and we did the live broadcast on that for the HBO special, they started to come out with their main, you know, CIA guy from the 90s, James Woolsey, and he was the CIA director, and he came out and he said, well, maybe Oswald had help, but, you know, the help that he had was KGB. It was a KGB agent, you know. So this whole thing was, can we swing out this idea of the CIA? Now there's a very strange JFK meme flying around, which is that JFK didn't die. He went into an underground bunker and, like, lived happily ever after with the breakaway civilization. I do feel like they place things out there to kind of remove the memory, because basically they can lose their ability to govern if the truth comes out about the types of suppression that they've done. Now let's look at UFOs. Everywhere you look in the Tom DeLong operation, we're surrounded by CIA people. And if you want a lot of detail on that, I did a 2-hour special on New Year's Day with it while you were with your family partying. By the way, did you have a good New Year's?
I had a great New Year's.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear. I can't even believe you took a day off. And knowing you, it's a rarity.
Yeah, true.
But so do you see this where they're kind of reinventing their image first with DeLong saying, well, they're fighting. Actually, they're fighting demons in his thing.
Well, I think that even just the choice of DeLong, they're trying to reinvent, as you're saying, I really think that's hilarious to call it the Mandela effect.
Yeah.
We're not going to move into a parallel universe where UFOs are what Tom DeLong says. Because, yes, because if you really look at the space, you know, the UFO conferences and the ufologists and everything, it really, there aren't a lot of young people involved or who care about that, because I guess they were too good at the deep state or whoever wants to keep it secret was so good at keeping it secret that it just was so out of the spotlight that younger people just aren't aware and don't care about it.
Right. But they have aimed a lot of different things at young people that include space. So they've got them hooked on sci-fi for sure. You know, it's a major theme.
Right. So they can deal with aliens and all of this, you know, Martian colonies and everything, as long as it's fictional.
Right. Well, one of the books that you did about the Montauk people, the Montauk group, the Montauk boys, that's basically 100% the basis for Stranger Things. As far as I can tell, it's exactly right out of that book.
A lot of it is. I mean, the basic is that there are a lot of details. The details are different. But
did it freak you out when you were watching that, being like, you know, did they just lift the whole story from my book?
No. You know what? It's come out a few times. I'm trying to remember. You know, there are many things like Aliens 3, the one with Sigourney Weaver, was very much full of Montauk information. A lot of sort of blockbuster sci-fi stuff always comes back and puts, you know, peppers the details that you find in the Montauk books in there. And it seems, you know, I've been looking at this for almost 20 years and watching it happen. So there, you know, I guess it's just a way to acclimate people. It's an acclimation program.
Would you say then the crux of the Montauk thing, from your perspective with the research you did, that it was basically an MKUltra project to the nth degree?
Yeah, I think that the part that is the most provable, or that makes the most sense, or is evidence of something, things that have been disclosed, or that was a big part of it. Now, you know, the alien technology, the alien interfacing, the underground bases with aliens, these are things that are very hard to prove, but probably over time will come out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's fascinating. It's a fascinating book. And I think that they really did, you know, I don't really have a whole lot of tolerance for the book. I mean, for the Stranger Things. I love the book, Stranger Things, the interpretation and the way that they've done that really promoted these kids running around. I'm not so into the series, but I do see that there's incredible push behind getting these ideas out there. It's almost like it's safe now. You know, it's like Kathy O'Brien's story could suddenly be like a headline movie, right?
It sort of is, you know, with the spotlight on pedophilia that's happening. I think it's not just happening in the alternative space. It's happening big time in the alternative space. In the 7 years that I've been publishing Forbidden Knowledge TV, I would have a lot of people want me to run pedophilia stories. And I just thought back then when I was getting paid a pretty penny by Google, I was thinking this is the sort of content that will get me in trouble. So,
right.
And not only that, I said, I want to live, you know, and I look back and I'm ashamed of myself, really.
Well, you've brought so much out on these stories over time that when you were starting out, just figuring out the lay of the land, I mean, that's different. But no, really, I think the truth is, when we get into this deep, this Mandela effect around UFOs, what is it really that they did when they released this information? Incredibly clumsily, right? This is the worst attempt at disclosure I've ever seen. As a matter of fact, the DOD instantly started disagreeing with Elizondo's version. And they said, well, we didn't even give him that film. So then later somebody said, that's a training film. And somebody else, these voices that came out, I heard from a number of people who were saying that that video not only came out earlier, as in 2014 on YouTube, but that it came out in 2007. So, I find that very interesting. And I don't think that there was any real revelation there.
No.
The only thing that was a revelation was, for some weird reason, we had the New York Times talking about UFO disclosure.
Right. That's what was unusual, not the footage. Yeah. As Joe Rogan said, it's like if I went to the movies and they showed me that, I'd ask for my money back.
Well, I've seen better UFO footage. There's a Australian UFO footage that is a ball, you know, and it's just there as a plane's coming in and they film it for 30 minutes. That's 10 times better than anything they've released. Now, that whole DeLong camp has said originally, well, we're going to release a third video, okay? Because apparently there's two there with those, the Tic Tac and the one with the guys talking. But those videos I don't find impressive. I've been following UFOs a long time. You've been following them a long time. I guess Joe Rogan has too. And none of us find it convincing on any stretch of the imagination. As a matter of fact, John Lear, who I know can get a little wild with theories, but is an excellent background as a pilot. And he's done very, very convincing overviews that show that the footage is faked and that the dialogue is faked.
Oh, and I'm like,
yeah, I mean, the dialogue does seem ridiculous. And like, look, dude, there's a fleet of them, you know, and they're only showing one. And, you know, I just don't buy it.
It looks like a little cutout that's just kind of superimposed.
It is. Yeah. I don't find anything extraordinary about it. Can you imagine the kind of footage that these people have of UFOs?
Yeah, just based on what I've seen with my naked eyes, they must be better stuff with their equipment.
You've had close to a dozen sightings yourself.
More. It's more like in the, almost 30.
Amazing. Wow. And most of them in South America?
No, all over. It's north, south, Europe.
Wow. Incredible. Those are remarkable. I do feel like we have all of these sightings. We have all of this research. We have all of this knowledge. We have all of these leaks and things over years. And then they wanted to reduce it down to this weird little Elizondo story. With Elizondo is a counterintelligence CIA asset, officer, and part of the DIA, reported to John Brennan at CIA and reported to James Clapper directly, the National Intelligence Director. I mean, you know, so for him to be hanging out at some lowly UFO desk, you know, basically collecting a paycheck and hoping that they'd release information about UFOs, it's a ridiculous story.
Well, and the premise that such an office had a $22 million budget is ridiculous. I mean, like I was saying, that's the
yes,
that's what right. A nuclear toilet costs. I mean.
Well, it's not even $22 million a year. It's $22 million for 5 years. So,
right. It's just completely nuts.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Nothing's that cheap at the Pentagon. It's insane.
Well, let's talk about this for a minute and exactly what was going on here. Because what I've seen is two different operations. And they both want to get at that exotic technology. in my opinion. But they somehow feel that their version of disclosure can do it, you know, that they can get this alien threat going. That's the one that's operating now. Alien threat, 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 UFO threat, UFO threat. Actually, the name of the program has threat, the word threat in it, right?
Advanced aerial threats, something like that.
Yes, identification program. Yeah. So that whole thing's about a threat. It's not like, hey, we're observing an unusual phenomenon and we'll see what happens. You know, it could be a new kind of insect manifestation, which they actually pulled that in a Nova special on UFOs. And I remember writing down insect manifestation, like it's the worst lie I've ever seen in my life. But anyway, I think the thrust of this and the point I want to make about it is this. When we are dealing with the CIA operating and giving us disclosure, these are master propagandists, and they are people whose job it is to lie. Counterintelligence is psychological warfare. That's the whole point. You don't want people to know in a foreign country's intelligence what your country is doing, so you feed them false stories. That's who Elizondo was, counterintelligence. Psychological warfare. Are we on the same page, right? So, you know, when we're talking about this, we have to know who we're dealing with. So we're not going to get the truth, UFO people, from the CIA. UFO researchers who've gone along with this, well, guess what? For the past 20 years, UFO researchers, you've taught me that the CIA and the government lie about UFOs. So why are you walking arm in arm with them now and hoping to be in next year's documentary? It doesn't make sense, and it's a bad look. So let's get real again. Let this be a reality check. That's a CIA operation. They even admit it. It's not even like I'm trying to portray it as a CIA operation. It's their own people. I mean, how can you deny it? They're all CIA officers.
Well, but it does seem like it's inconsistent, you know, the way it's being rolled out. It does seem like there's some stepping on toes and people disagreeing and the role it can,
now it is. Because the rollout went so badly. Now they're after it. And I think it's because I think they were going to pull the plug after DeLong stumbled so badly in November in his interviews, because he was the main face of Academy to the Stars. And they ran this bad operation to get stock money for Academy to the Stars. And that didn't look good either. So the whole thing has had this kind of weird rollout from the start. And as soon as the New York Times article hit, and it didn't go well, I mean, it went well in that the mainstream media picked it up and average people were like, oh.
I think it's been the most heavily trafficked page on the New York Times now. I think it's one of the most viewed pages on the New York Times right now.
No, I agree. I agree. I just don't think in the sense that it went well for the people who were operating it. Mm-hmm. That is, they were looking for something from it, which is they wanted to get their threat idea out there. They wanted Elizondo unquestionably, you know, to be accepted. And it just didn't work out that way. Although there's tons of support for him, and in the mainstream media, they paint him as the glowing, disgruntled guy who saved us all. So we have to really, you know, take a good look at what that operation is all about. Why are they doing it? Now, on one hand, we have Catherine Austin Fitz announcing in October that Professor Mark Skidmore from Michigan State University, together with her and his students, sussed out that the DOD and HUD were missing $21 trillion, that's with a T, dollars, missing money. So suddenly, out of the blue, we get Academy to the Stars. Now, it's been building up for sure, but we get the New York Times part going. I think there's a definite relationship between the suppression of this story and the pumping up of this bizarre CIA motif story about them being heroes and releasing UFO info. And also about them fighting off threats. That's another piece of this Mandela effect. Because, you know, a good CIA agent, you know, on a regular intelligence assignment, yeah, you know, they're protecting the country, they're doing what they can. But the general overreach of the people behind the CIA, since it was created, and all these different presidents have tried to get that back in the box. And that goes back to the OPC, you know, when we first started off, the Office of Policy Coordination was this branch that used to go into foreign countries and overthrow elections and do things of this nature. And the regular CIA, you know, Truman took a look at that and said, well, those guys are doing, you know, they're blowing up trains and stuff. Let's get them under control. And there's even an FBI memo from J. Edgar Hoover that's like, those guys are off their rocker. But apparently the OPC guys are who took over the CIA. So we're dealing with this kind of rogue element in there since the 50s. And, you know, their battle with Kennedy was public. And, you know, anyone who's looked into it knows that there are CIA links to that assassination. I mean, you know, let's get real. And then years and years of citizen suppression and a number of illegal activities domestically. So I don't understand how the UFO researchers can go stand up there side by side and say, hey, the CIA told us, so it must be real. This is the kind of thing that I think is remarkable. You know, the CIA is not your friend when it comes to giving you information. They won't even let records out. You know, they're blocking records from the JFK assassination 54 years ago. How do we get into these scenarios where you know, we're supposed to trust the New York Times telling us the CIA and UFO disclosure?
Yeah, very true.
Pretty interesting, isn't it? So is it a Mandela effect, or am I overlooking something that else, you know, something else that's going on here with this release that you...
Well, it was definitely an attempt to start over, to reset with a new generation, you know, with Tom DeLonge and younger people, you know, 30 and younger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's older, I guess his fan base were probably younger than he was. Wow, I listened to some of that stuff. It is the worst. That stuff is the worst.
I know, it makes Green Day sound like Beethoven, right?
Oh, my God.
It is terrible, yeah.
My God, he's got like $80 million. It's like, what kind of a world are we living in?
Have I not been tracking the Tom DeLonge thing since day one? And have I not been completely...
Yeah, well, they called you. No, it was Vice, right? Vice called you.
Yes.
Radio. It was a radio show. And it was these, whatever, these 20-something kids who...
They weren't buying the Tom DeLonge thing then either.
No, they were. They thought he was cool. They were like, no, remember? They were kind of loving him.
Yeah, but they didn't buy his UFO story. They said, oh, yeah, hey, well, I had a poster of you in my bedroom when I was a kid, you know.
But, yeah.
I think the thing about DeLonge, it is important, and it can't be avoided, you know, and it's not personal. But the fact is, if you're going to come out there with all these CIA guys and said, boy, they let me see this cool stuff, and, you know, you're going to get... flack from honest people who don't want to be have the wool pulled over their eyes in relation to UFOs. You know, we know the UFO phenomena started over 70 years ago in terms of trackable phenomena in government records. And for you to pretend, and for this group to pretend, this thing is just starting December 16th with these muddy videos and CIA officers, you know, it's not going to fly. And I think there's been a real pushback against that whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't think that that's what Tom DeLonge was trying to portray. He did go to some conferences and say, I've been reading the same books as you. And
we don't know. Frankly, to be honest with you, no one's ever vetted Tom DeLonge at all in relation to this, because you think, oh, well, he's just some rock star guy. You know, we don't understand. I mean, he's a Mason. Well, you can't shoot somebody for being a Mason.
San Diego, which is a Navy town. His brother is Special Forces. I know that.
Yeah, right. Okay. So these are links. And so I don't, you know, I don't buy the little humdrum story of Tom DeLonge either. You know, I invited him on the show to talk about it. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But the point is this, that op coming out right after the JFK files were blocked and then in this rolling release, and we have gotten some good records out of it, but still it was an unusual situation. The $21 trillion missing, not just Fitz estimating this, but actually having a university professor and a university on board, starting to connect these dots, and I'm seeing a pattern here. And then in the middle of that, what did we get? Q, right? Take the Patriot people off their own track, right? That whole thing, the battle with the 4chan boards. This is a tsunami of disinformation.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
It's like the McDonald's of conspiracy. Like, right. That's what Q is like, fast. It's like, here you go.
You could explain this really well. Tell me what you mean.
Well, just that you're going to have everything handed to you and spoon-fed to you by this guy on a chat board. You'll know everything. You'll know everything that's happening in the Trump White House. You know.
Would you like a little Princess Diana assassination with your JFK fries?
Yeah, and with your, what is it, God and Emperor? Is that what they call it? God and Emperor.
God and Emperor Trump. Well, yeah, these are the things that spin around on those boards. But I will say this, that where they say, and where this meme caught on, follow the white rabbit, right? It turns it into a game. It's like Farmville on Facebook or something. You know, this is not it's not a game. This is research, right? And for these guys to come out and come up with this thing, and, you know, people on Twitter following along thinking that they're watching Gitmo and Soros being executed at Gitmo. I mean, it's a bizarre fantasy. Now, I do feel that we sussed out the Q issue with Dr. Farrell's video this week. And, you know, Joseph Farrell, he is the Oxford scholar, and we've done so many shows with him. And he sussed it out, and he gave, you know, the material credit for being crafted by intelligent people. But he saw it, like I saw it, as a marketing op, and probably in place by the corporate media trying to take some of their marketing share back. But in any case, it was some kind of a data mining op, because it wasn't like QAnon was looking for money like Academy to the Stars was. They were spreading a message. They wanted your eyeballs. They wanted your ears. They wanted your clicks, your memes, and all that kind of thing. And what they did was they created this kind of artificial structure, which was maybe meant to replace the alternative media in its culmination. I don't think that's going to happen now, because some of the main people who were the Q supporters are defecting from that whole project. And the thing was, they have their own research going on, you know, like there's plenty of research. They don't need a nameless, faceless 4chan board to tell them how to live. So I think that's very significant. And anything that we can do in that regard to bring that up, you know, and I noticed that you've been very careful when these memes come out, like Flat Earth or, you know, the Q thing. You don't run those videos. You say, you know what, even for people to look at this stuff, you know, it's an op right off the bat. You've just kind of honed your senses.
Well, I look for something good. I look for something, but then I can't. Then it's just, there's no there. And I'm not, you know, I have run some Flat Earth things only to just, you know, debunk them. But
Flat Earth was the thing that didn't really fully catch on. This was one of those weird.
Well, it's caught on with some people.
Oh, yeah. Well, they have a conference and stuff. I just mean the wider, it wasn't widely adopted.
What are you expecting? I mean, I think that's an experiment. That's some kind of an experiment to see, like, how successful have we been at dumbing people down? That's what that experiment looks like to me.
Well, isn't it stupidity, though? It's interesting, because the ultimate dumb thing that you can say about somebody is, oh, what are you, a flat earther, right?
Yeah, I mean, for
centrally, right. That's the best insult since 1400. So we're not going to walk into that trap. My God, you know.
It's wild.
I will say, though, it's fascinating, because we've seen those ops over time. You know,
and then there's also this other thing that I've been talking about, the Nasara idea, that the white dragon family thing. And
yes,
you know, that you're going to be rescued. It's like a messianic thing, as Joseph Farrell says. It's a messianic kind of flavor. Something's going to deliver us. And so that's what QAnon is. That's what Nasara is. That's what the white dragons are.
Right.
You know, it's either that or then some kind of, eschatological.
Yes.
That's the word. Eschatology. Right. Eschatological is the study of poop, but.
Well, as you're getting close there. right. You know what's fascinating about that? I noticed this too, because the Nasara thing and all that culminated in these things that came up around these groups, and they called it "The Event is Coming." Have you seen this? And "The Event is Coming," the event. And they were drilling on that even in 2017, pretty hardcore. And that's their version. And then suddenly with the Q stuff and all that, it was "The Storm is Coming," right? So you got the event, you got the storm, you know, of course the storm is something that came out of a Batman movie, right? They had "The Storm is Here." And now legitimate research, you know, of course is, you know, are there things going on that where certain officials will be taken down and stuff like that? It does happen. And there are important things to be researched, but that's the whole point. It's not some prepackaged.
Will cryptocurrencies sort of be what Nasara was talking about? Probably.
Wow. Well, now that's an even big question. Okay. And we've done a few shows on Bitcoin with Catherine Austin Fitz. And I'll tell you, this is her quote regarding Bitcoin. She says, if the tech guys are allowed to complete their vision, slavery is coming back. So she's relating Bitcoin to the world digital currency. And I don't think she's targeting just Bitcoin, but it's this whole process.
Yeah, well, there's a whole other level now that is more advanced than the blockchain, which is very slow. And, you know, Ethereum works on the blockchain too, and they all do. But there's a new thing called Hashgraph, which is infinitely faster.
Right.
You know, if wielded the right way, either one, I mean, they could make things totally transparent and accountable and legal and, and yes, punish people instantly. But the thing is, you know, for my experience and Catherine's, you know, if you've interfaced with the bureaucracy and with governments to any degree, they love the sloppiness and the behemoth, you know, the lack of efficiency there, because then they can, that's where they can hide. That's where those trillions hide.
Exactly. It's an excellent point. I think the people who are into Bitcoin and into cryptocurrency, they are trying, you know, they have a vision on the alternative side who have really adopted it. Even people like Cliff High, they have a vision of how good it could be. And they seem to kind of avoid the pitfalls of it because they can see the benefits of it. And to their credit, Bitcoin will be adopted widely over the next couple of years. And but here's the thing. As it stands, there's no FDIC coverage on your funds. There's an incredible rate of crashes and hacks that go on. And then when your money's gone, your money's gone. You know, somebody steals your Bitcoin and that's it. So I guess, you know, it's a very unsafe, unsteady thing, but it's coming in, right? The digital currency is coming in. It's not something that can be avoided. And I don't think that, you know, I know a lot of people who are in the alternative side and they say, you know, well, you don't want to be against Bitcoin. That's the whole solution. It's a democracy, you know, but Bitcoin isn't. It's just a digital product. As a matter of fact, it's funny. We weren't even going to talk about Bitcoin, but I was reading Catherine Austin Fitt's Control 101, which is fantastic. And this is the opening quote that she has. And I find this is great kismet, because I wasn't even going to read this and you weren't going to bring it up, but here we are. So I'm going to read it. And she said, "I've rarely experienced as much frustration as I did this fall. In one forum after another, I listened to a series of highly intelligent people explain how we're going to ensure freedom through new currencies and other financial products that depend on digital technologies." Now, this is the thing. By the way, everyone, this thing, absolutely incredible. Control 101, it's her report on the control systems and how they're coming out through the smartphones, through Bitcoin, through a number of different systems, and how the whole point is control. And that's what the corporate goal is when they get together at Davos. You know, shortly here, they're going to be talking about that. How do you get more and more control? That's the way it works. And
I guess it won't then, it won't be able to apply to them, because the whole way that they do everything is by using the sloppiness and the non-transparent, to their advantage and hiding all kinds of theft and corruption, you know?
Well, I think the point that, this is a good point, actually, because the point that Fitt's making is you can't solve a political problem with a digital product. This is it. The problem is in the political side, the law enforcement side. So the ethical side. So if the law isn't enforcing, you know, if we already have a system that's not doing that, then trying to say, well, this digital product is a democracy saver, check it out, we'll be able to do peer-to-peer currencies with each other. And then we know the minute that you start a local currency in a place like North Carolina, the black helicopters come down, you're swatted, you're out of there, right? So for them to allow Bitcoin and things like that, what does that tell us?
Well, I think, you know, the argument, the story goes, is that it was too small for them to bother with, and now it's sort of gotten away from them.
Okay, so if you take...
Well, and then what the SEC did, I mean, because it would be illegal if it were a currency, I guess, or it could potentially become illegal, you know.
Right.
But when they classified it as a security, which is what the SEC did, it began to behave like one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we saw the tulip mania happen with Bitcoin.
Right.
And not only that, I mean, I think that in some way, it's inversely proportionate to the incredible. You talk about Bitcoin being a bubble. I mean, no other bubble has behaved like this, Daniel. I mean, I understand what Catherine's arguments against. I think Bitcoin as an investment is not something that I would recommend to anyone. You know, it's a pump and dump, like she's saying. Mm-hmm. But it's the technology and what the incredible possibility. We've never, as a species, been here before. This is, you know, not even the 10th year of us understanding like how to organize life around, you know, this way. So it's a lot more than a currency or a security, certainly. And so anyway, what I'm saying is that any other bust, you know, any other boom bust cycle doesn't come back like a week later, practically where it was before. I mean, we've seen these 30% and 40% corrections, but then it just keeps on coming back up. Even this last very catastrophic one, it's already back up to 17,000.
It is. It's fascinating. It has incredible.
There's no other, nothing in the history of securities has ever behaved like this. Ever.
All right. Well, let's do a raw example here. Okay. I'm Julian Assange. I'm hanging out in my embassy and I've got $50,000 in cash. Now, if I have a digital currency and I'm Julian Assange and I've got $50,000 in digital currency, they can, in effect, shut off my digital currency. They can prevent me from transacting with it. So I can be shut off. But with my dollars, I can't be shut off. So in terms of democracy and free action and staying away from the powers that be, confiscating what you have, my dollars, as compromised as the whole dollar system is, are still contain more power, political power, for an individual like Assange than a digital currency would. Does that make sense?
For the meantime, except for dollars are mostly digital too. Most of the dollars that exist are...
I agree with that in the wider scope of what you're talking about, but I just mean on the ground. For example, you know, when he goes out for coffee. Well, I guess, I mean, you know, in the embassy, you can't anyway, but the point is he can use money, right? So the idea that since they wanted him so bad, if we run a digital currency, as we know, they shut off many of the ways he could access things like PayPal and all the rest of it. So in the case of a political situation, if he has $50,000 in cash and dollars, versus $50,000 in digital currency that can be shut off, he's doing better with the cash aspect.
Well, except for that, you know, his cash was blocked and he's happy as anybody that he started.
Okay, I think
the one who's gloated about accepting Bitcoin. It's like $30 million because of Bitcoin.
But I just mean in terms of a brute force example, you know, just a very basic example. That's the danger that's being pointed out here with the adoption of a digital world currency, correct? If you have somebody who steps out of line, boom, you shut off. You financially sanction them.
Well, if you control that network, yes.
Well, any digital network can be controlled, yes. I mean, do you honestly think if they wanted to that they could not control Bitcoin? Of course they could. As a matter of fact, it's one of the points that Catherine Fitz said, which is if you
think that they're waiting, they're allowing people to develop it. Yeah. To develop
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely.
And then there's this whole hash graph thing, which is like light years beyond the blockchain.
Yeah. And I do think, I mean, you know, I understand people going into this and I think a lot of people go into it in earnest. I just think, again, it has to be a sensible approach. There's no way a financial product can solve a political problem. That, I think, is the issue that we're...
Well, at the end of the day, it's not even political. It's really the human condition. That's the problem.
Well, go ahead. Tell me what you mean.
Well, humans lie. They're corrupt. You know, they're psychopaths. And, you know.
So what we need, then, is a better citizenry, is what you're saying, in the final analysis.
Yeah. Better species.
Well, we can get there. We can get there. I do feel that if we get the truth, we have a better shot at it. Because again, even the American Revolution, it was 5 to 10% of the people who caught on and made it happen. It's not like everybody all at once stood up and said, we're going to do it. So it's making this core group understand the importance of it. And, you know, you might think talking about something like the UFO factor doesn't relate on these two train tracks, but it does, because of course, these things are all related in terms of the truth. Any subject that you go after, you should have the truth about. On the political side, on the exotic technology side, on the paranormal side, or on the UFO side, these are the things that we need the truth about in order to evolve as civilization.
And I think that's vital, like any of these topics. These things, what they have in common is that they're vital.
I think so. And I think that's the real crux of this whole matter. So somebody can have a disagreement about whether it's, you know, Bitcoin or if they don't believe in UFOs or whatever, it doesn't matter. The point is, what is the truth that we have? You know, what is the information that we have that we can look at and make an informed judgment about? Because in the bottom, the final analysis is all about development. And if you don't have the facts on the ground and a small group does, and if they have a group that's controlling exotic technology and they're controlling the secrecy and they have limitless rights, like they just passed yesterday, again, under FISA, which they can easily do warrantless surveillance. I mean, then it's not a situation that can move forward until those things are handled. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And then what we find is we're in a very curious moment in history where, you know, these similar kinds of warrants were executed by the, you know, Department of Justice on candidate Trump based on this totally fraudulent dossier that cost whatever, was it $10 million that Hillary paid for it? The Peach dossier?
Yeah, that's incredible.
And that was the document that was used to justify the investigations that were done.
I want you to tie something in across a 13-month period here, because you were the one who brought it to my attention, and we actually did a video about it just before the election of 2016. And it was all about a very unusual memo that came out that was about a Hillary group gaming out different scenarios for how they could make voter turnout light that day, because they figured out the less voters that would show up, the better they would do. And there was one very strange aspect in this. Do you remember this?
Yes, it was a last ditch effort to keep voters from the polls, and it would be a fake staged alien invasion using lasers, like a Project Bluebeam thing. Only it had a different name. It's funny because I've had to deal with so much other information since. What was the name of that thing? And it was actually one of her top strategists who came up with it.
Bensinger.
Not Bensinger. That's my stepdad's name.
I'm mixing it
close.
Up.
It's close, though. It
begins with a B. Okay, we know.
Benninger, something like that.
Benninger Group, yes.
Yeah.
And what they did, they gamed out the scenario. Now, knowing what we know about them rolling out this weird Elizondo thing that was a leftover from when they thought Clinton was going to get in, and when they brought it up, you know, and they brought this thing out on December 16th, do you think it's possible that that memo was the real thing?
Well, I know someone who was in Marines intelligence. Mm-hmm. And when he saw that and he spoke to a Navy general about it, they were pissed because Benninger did not have the clearance to have access to that document, let alone be sharing that information with the campaign.
Because of the kind of voice of God technology that they were describing in the memo.
Yes. And that this was such top secret stuff that nobody had the clearance to know that stuff. Wow. And that worse, that it was a WikiLeak than it was revealed by WikiLeaks to everybody.
Wow, that's fascinating. You brought that up. Nobody paid attention to it. We did a show on it. And then when that New York Times thing came out, I said, I want to go back and watch that show because it's very strange. And we know all during the campaign that Clinton was saying, oh, it's a UAP, you know, I know about this new UFO term. And there's a WikiLeaks that came out where she was absolutely ticked off because they didn't ask her the question about UFOs. And she's chiding John Podesta. And she's like, I took all this time to learn the UAP thing. And then the host you set me up with didn't even ask me like the canned question about UFOs so I could answer. There's something weird that was going on there. And I believe that when we see those WikiLeaks things come out where Podesta's talking to DeLong and all that, and then we update it to this December 16th thing. And what do we see on the other side? We see Trump doing the Space Council. Well, who do we see on the Space Council? Mike Pence taking over. The Space Council was announced under Bush Quayle. They were going to go back to Mars by 2025, or go to Mars, I'm sorry, and go back to the moon. And back to Mars is probably more accurate, though. They've probably already been there. But I would say this. That went defunct for some reason. And then Obama said, I'm going to reopen the Space Council, which was a weird thing. He said it in 2014, never happened either. Mm-hmm. Trump gets in, he finally does it, and he has Pence at the head of it. And who's sitting next to Pence? This is something I talked about with Catherine Fitz And it was weird because her attitude towards it was very strange. But it was Rex Tillerson. Why would you have Rex Tillerson on the Space Council?
Because he's called Secretary of State, and he would be the one who'd be Al-Nazia with the aliens.
Exactly. So, you know, we're definitely looking at something very, very interesting there. And it's almost like the flubbed New York Times thing. It's like the weird.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely, you know, so I think, you know, that's what's important is if you look at this larger pattern of, yeah, there's an agenda to manage disclosure.
Yes, it is. It is. And, you know, over the years, we've had people come out, these like Greer, for example, and he did one of the most important things, although his later, you know, years, like, wasn't as productive. And you can say what you want about him later, but he put together those conferences where they had the military people come together. And that's where a lot of the Rendlesham people came forward the first time. And that was a very straight ahead kind of message, which is the government has this technology. They know about these cases, and these are these government, military, ex-military guys, very legitimate people going on the record. You know, the idea had always been, well, somebody sees a UFO. Why is it always some person in, you know, as a farmer out there? And here they had all these very sophisticated people coming forward over a 30-year period that they had been involved in some kind of aspect of UFO secrecy. So we have had those movements. We've had that kind of thing. But then if you compare, even if people have problems with him, if you compare Greer against DeLong, I mean, it is such, you know, wow, you know, the credibility factor is just zero. So I think it's disturbing. And, you know, this is, I think, where they're kind of leading things. And this is why we're going to get back to the Mandela effect one last time. Because if they can create a world where UFOs were discovered lickety-split December 16th, 2017, and Tom DeLong and all these CIA guys were doing it with Harry Reid and Robert Bigelow, those, you know, Harry Reid, that titan of UFO disclosure, who blocked audits of the Federal Reserve six times. Okay, let's get a look at this guy. You know, then they're reshaping the whole history for people who aren't aware of it, who weren't born in time to catch it, or whatever it happens to be. That is putting it down the memory hole. And I, you know, over and over again, I go back to the book 1984. We're seeing so many of these techniques used, and people need to go back and study this book because the whole term Orwellian is what we're seeing, which is they think people are just going to forget that we already understand these things, that the truth is manipulated. And so certainly, you know, a UFO Mandela effect, they like that. Yeah. They'd like to be seen.
That New York Times article, I think that the last, if I'm right, the last sentence in that article is quoting Harry Reid saying something like, "The truth is out there." Like Harry Reid, the truther, you know.
It's Harry Reid Mulder, okay?
Right.
They had some pictures of him with sunglasses, I guess, because he had a black eye, but they were putting those out there, okay. All right, I wear sunglasses too. It's not too much I can say about that. But Trump Space Corps, okay, got locked up in committee. But Trump proposed, I want the Space Corps. I want them to take that away from the Air Force and have a corps just dedicated to space.
Oh, right. And it's a big argument. Like, he doesn't want it to be part of the Air Force, and the Air Force is mad because they want that money. They want that budget.
Exactly. And although we don't have time to do it in this episode, you and I are going to do an episode on the multi-domain force. And that is going to be, that's going to shake up a lot of things. So, you know, let's do that next week, because that's going to be incredible. We have a little bit of time left, so we're going to take some questions. People, when you ask questions, you're going to help Olivia out here. You're going to make them in caps. And, you know, it's great to have everybody here, by the way. It's very important to see so many people come out. It's a fantastic turnout. And we've been having some great live shows, which really complement the whole thing that we're doing with the program. And it gives us the ability to interact more with you and for you to say hello to great guests like Alexandra Bruce, which is fantastic. So we'll give you a few minutes to get some questions going, but do them in caps so we just know what they are. You know, there's a story up there about Corey Good. I am going to say this one thing about that. They did this thing where they're saying he's the Prophet Enoch. Okay, that's their new thing. And that I think he, as the Prophet Enoch, as he was discovering he was the Prophet Enoch, like he took out a reptilian at the same time. So, amazing. Well, what can you say about that, huh?
Zero.
There is a there's a saying that happened. It was around the Germany, and I was reading about this, and they said that the money wasn't worth spit. So if you're going to ask questions about that, I'm going to probably answer with that question, but it's not going to be money I'm talking about. So talking about that wouldn't be worth the spit. It's the spin on that. But I am glad that, you know, these people come out and they say things that we can kind of rate them by. And the people who collaborate on messages like that, well, you know, I guess these are the types of things that answer themselves. But I think that we have so many important issues that when we have distractions like that, I'm dealing with them less and less, actually. I think I've said everything I need to say in relation to those people in those groups, honestly. And we have such important real issues to deal with that, you know, if somebody wants to dress up and call themselves Enoch, I guess that's up to people to suss out. I think, you know, one way or another, they're going to suss out who that is. You know, we have Tessa Dick. And Tessa told me earlier that she is actually the ex-wife of Philip K. Dick. And so we're very happy to have you here. And we know that you're an author yourself, and you've written some very incredible things, and that you collaborated with Philip Dick on some of his books. So we're very honored to have you here. And it's nice to have you and your contributions here. We appreciate that. And I'll be looking for, you know, your comments here, too. So if you have questions, again, in caps, and questions for Alexandra too. A couple of things I want to get to, though, before we wrap up, Alexandra, is what's going on with Forbidden Knowledge TV? What's your theme? What are you looking at for January?
The theme, you know, I guess I'm so busy just chasing after things. What I've been finding is really good documentaries lately. Oliver Stone film about Ukraine was just finally, I guess they gave up trying to sell the, you know, the TV rights. And so it's on YouTube and it's great. It's, wow. I think people have to see it. It's called Ukraine on Fire.
Wow.
And it really, it's interviewing the guy who was ousted. It really is kind of shocking. If you paid any attention to that whole situation, I don't know if people remember back in 2004 during the Orange Revolution. I think it was like the first of the color revolutions mm-hmm. back then. And I remember when that very handsome candidate was poisoned and he was disfigured and he sort of like Frankenstein after that. What nobody knew at the time was that he was married to a woman who worked at the State Department and was born in Chicago. And that he was completely a CIA puppet. And then you really see that extensively, how extensively that guy, Yushchenko.
Yes, Yuri Yushchenko. Olivia, you have a question for us?
Okay, hang on a second. Great discussion tonight. First of all, there's lots thank of you. Fans thank you Alexandra.
For... Oh, yes.
There's somebody who wants to mow Alexandra's lawn, which is very cute.
Everyone wants to mow Alexandra's lawn.
What does that mean?
okay. Yeah. Love Alexandra. Smart, tough, and beautiful. So that's another comment. Give me one second. Okay. So Steve.
I have the smart, beautiful thing going on too, but the tough.
Okay. So Lori Serafin says, do you guys think there's any gold left in Fort Knox?
Wow. That's a great question. Mm-hmm. Starting with Alexandra, go ahead.
Well, I'm somebody who I have no, you know, inside scoop on that. But sort of based on the World Trade Center story, how they were trying to vacate gold from there and how, you know, how bankrupt our financial system is, I wouldn't be surprised. What is it? We wouldn't give Germany or still haven't and still won't give Germany their gold back?
Yes. Yeah. It's their fascinating. Gold.
It could be that it's not there. I don't know.
Yeah, there's been so much weirdness. There are actually books about this where there have been incidents where people have like jumped out windows and secretaries overheard things after audits of Fort Knox. I do feel that there's something very unusual going on there. I think by the time any kind of investigation would catch up with it and they would put the gold back. But did they use the gold for other things? I absolutely think that they do.
You want another question?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, you're running the show.
Actually, this is a little edgy, but I wanted to ask it. So Ted Graham says they can't shut off Bitcoin. It's anonymous. DJ is talking shit. He has no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah, well, this guy, this is just the type of person that we don't allow on the boards, and we certainly don't answer the question.
Well, I'm going to lead into another question around that. So,
by the way, we don't ever use four-letter words on here. Okay.
So government.
But I appreciate your edginess.
Okay, government is slavery. You obviously didn't pay very close attention to Cliff High, or you would know that distributed cryptocurrencies can't be stopped by the government.
Okay, so we have what's going on here is we have feverish people in a fever about Bitcoin. You know, it's nice to be enthusiastic about things, but you can watch Cliff High. He's going to say one thing about it. I've done the shows with Catherine Austin Fitz. You have the ability to watch the information from Fitz and watch the information from High, do some research in between, and you'll get what you deserve based on what you invest your time and energy into. It's not, you know, don't shoot the messenger for doing the show. I mean, the thing is, Bitcoin has a lot of questions to answer. And if you take on Bitcoin like a religion, then you're going to be disappointed because it ain't. And it's just a currency or it's, you know, a different type of technology. Look, I ran a technology magazine for 10 years. Okay. If you think I don't understand about technology, you surely are very mistaken. But I do feel like this fever around Bitcoin, you see this sometimes, Alexander, that's not a good way to go into something, is it? Because you don't want to be crazy passionate about a financial product. You know, you want technical information that you can make a healthy decision about.
Right. I mean, I have a limited understanding of it. I mean, I have maybe a little more than the average person. So when you ask me if the networks can be controlled, I don't know the answer. And so if the guy's saying that they can't be, I can't prove him wrong. I don't know. I don't know enough. And I need to know. I'm going to look into that now. Really, I'm going to find out.
Yeah. I think it's important. I recommend everyone watch the Bitcoin Op, which is Catherine Austin Fitz in our interview. She lays out a very good case that Bitcoin is being allowed to be propagated in order for the government to control and create a digital currency. And, everything is pointing to that inevitability. You know, these things don't get out. We've talked about this. Things don't get out and get that far unless they have help from behind the scenes, one way or another, beneficial or not. They're allowed to happen. So, the idea that it's doing this thing and it's out of their control. I mean, you know, we have to play real in this. So it's very important to do. If people love Bitcoin, good, go for it. Make some money. You know, I'm not saying that Bitcoin is some evil thing, you know, to speculate on, but don't try to base a political movement on Bitcoin, because we're going to go back to the phrase, you can't solve a political problem with a financial product. Okay, next question.
All right, lighter question. Hold on a second.
I appreciate the question. Go ahead.
Selena Shakti Radford says, how many black suits do you own?
Shakti, I have a question for you. Why, in my incredible interview with Linda Moulton Howe, did you write ZZZ in the comments? I still don't understand that. Okay. The truth is, Tessa Dick has said it, I have 4 black suits. She's right. And they go in rotation, and I have other suits too. But, in terms of doing this show, boy, this is the best suit to do it in.
I've only seen you in a t-shirt and jeans once, though.
That's true. One thing I will never forget is driving with you in Austin. It was one of the crazy experiences of my life. leave it to your imagination. Go ahead.
Okay, Steve Forster, are there any reports of UFOs shooting down military planes?
Yes. Oh, yes, absolutely. And there were many cases of that in the 50s. Jim Morris did a fascinating study of that, which is a number of regular, there were shoot down orders in the early 50s for UFOs, and they changed those later. Although I think it's very difficult for UFOs to maneuver around our skies now, the way that our defenses are set up. But in the 50s, they had shoot down orders, and he tracked that very well. And what they saw in response is that there were a number of mysterious plane crashes on our side. So it's like weird retaliation. I think Jim Mars is a good place. God rest his soul. He certainly left a great legacy of information. What else you got?
Okay.
Olivia is picking
Ghost
up a good
Recon,
stuff.
And he's been great tonight, or she. If I may ask one question, does he have any idea when they're doing another Secret Space Program conference?
You know, there is a conference, and I can't give you any more details than that. But I will say, as soon as tangible details come out about it, you can find them on the Dark Journalist newsletter. And if you go to darkjournalist.com, just sign up for the newsletter. It's free. You get updates on all the shows and all the events and all the videos that are happening. That's the best way to stay abreast of that. What else you got?
Joseph Korea says, what product does DJ use in his hair? It looks bad.
I can't give away secrets like that. You'll do it. You'll have your own show, and then we'll compete with each other, and it'll get weird. Trust me.
So someone asked a really great question.
Yes.
Cody Oliphant, where can I find a single PDF summarizing everything we need to know to be basically the true state of things?
Well, I wouldn't say a single PDF. I would say pay attention to ForbiddenKnowledgeTV.net, DarkJournalist.com, Solari.com, GizaDeathStar.com. If you have those four, you will be well briefed on the realities around you. And
yeah, and if it all seems daunting, you can just sort of follow your intuition, like use the search engines on these websites and look up specific terms and sort of follow your own curiosity, because my website has almost 6,000 pages now, and it is kind of overwhelming. But so just sort of follow your own line of inquiry and
your site is one of the best indexed sites, though. I will say that it's easy to get around if you know what you're looking for.
Yeah, if you use the search. I think a lot of people don't really see these things. You know, they don't see that it's there, that these fields are there to be used. Yeah, but
the only other thing I could add to that is, you know, when you get right down to it, to knowing what to avoid, you know, I'd keep the Gaia TV stuff like way over there, because they've proven over and over again they'll put profit and ratings ahead of the facts, whether it's the Nazca mummy or, you know, other silliness. Okay. But that's a good question. And I wish there were some magic PDF.
Okay. Jim Cooper, will disclosure lead to WikiLeaks outing the SSP?
Well, disclosure and WikiLeaks, you know, WikiLeaks involved with disclosure. WikiLeaks has never said anything in regards to UFOs, which is very unusual.
No, and there's almost a pejorative
rejection of the whole idea.
Yeah.
Interesting. So no and no is the answer.
Rasparagu, Tom DeLong versus Corey Good. Who is trustworthy?
I would believe Tom DeLong before Corey Good.
Well, it's, yeah. But I mean, we're you know, we're kind of, if this were a house, we're going the basement and then the lower sewer. So
one person is a confabulator. I don't think Tom DeLong is a confabulator. I think this is the problem with everybody, including the Bitcoin guy and anybody who wants to seek truth, is that the wishful thinking problem, you know, the Nasara problem, the wanting to see what you want to see instead of what is the problem. You know, it's tough, but if you really want to know the truth, you have to get out of the way.
Yes. It's very important. Okay.
Okay. So this is hard to pronounce. It's Zayak Zevin. Where does the military UFO evidence go to? Bigelow?
Yes. That was the crazy thing that I found out from reading whatever, something that I ran recently, was that, the FAA manual.
Yes.
Tells pilots not to go to the airlines, not to go to the FAA, but to go to Bigelow with their UFO sightings and inquiries. You know, they have an experience or sighting, is to go to Bigelow and give them the information. Bigelow is the one this is the aerospace contractor friend of Harry Reid in Las Vegas, who is the company that built the storage facility for these metallic alloys that they're admitting that they have in their possession.
Yeah, it's a very unusual part of the story. I think when they have a real, genuine crash retrieval, it goes to Area 51 and the like. But certainly they have taken materials and used things with Bigelow. But the thing is, if they had a real crash saucer and they admitted, you know, like in the article, that Bigelow is looking at crash saucer parts, the United Nations would be all over it. You know, it would be a complete outrage. So when they, every time they've gone up to that point, they asked Elizondo, what do you mean? He says, well, when a craft goes through a cloud, it leaves particles. All right, so this is the type of stuff that they're talking about. So they're not talking about a crash landing and taking.
No, it's little pieces. That's what they're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't even believe they haven't proved any of that. So it's all hearsay, and it's Elizondo hearsay, which is, you know, so far has proven not to be very reliable. Let's put it to you that way. Okay, what else you got?
Okay, so Annette from Ascending Starseed.
Hey, is on, Annette.
She's had some great comments tonight. I wonder if you could just discuss what she wrote, which is, they have weaponized hope.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a great, I love that. Yeah, we go from hope porn to weaponized hope, but well said.
It is. So Catherine Austin Fitz uses this term hope porn for material like Q, and where... And these are narratives that came out of the Ben Fulford stuff, and they were propagated by the Gaia TV crowd, and they were the cabal is winning, you know, justice is triumph. I was on the front lines watching the ET war, you know, this kind of thing. And these narratives are comic book style narratives that take your thinking down. So when you weaponize hope, as she said, and they call it selling hopium, the idea is that there's been so much on the fear porn side, and there's been so much of that, you know, the Alex Jones thrust, and you don't have to defend Alex, because I know a lot of the work that comes out of InfoWars is okay, but there is a hope, you know, there's a fear porn factor with them. There's an emergency broadcast every 5 minutes. So, but then the imitators of Alex, people who want to get on that train, there's so many of them that they've burnt people out. I think their adrenal glands are just tapped out. And so when we look at that, we have to say, where would they go next? And hope porn, you know, this is the time of hope porn. So it's something I think to be watched. And she's right. I mean, Annette makes a great point, and that's a great website.
But, you know, back to this this wishful thinking thing, it's maybe what's old is what's new. I mean, being blinded and only wanting to see what you want to see is—it's not going to work for you. It's your own self-inflicted wound.
Right. What else you got? We got time for two more. Okay. Let's take a couple more questions.
Paula Marie says, "People say aliens are demons. Can you address that?"
I think that's a superstition, and I don't think. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of ways of looking at demonic things from the point of view of religions, primitive religions, and from a spiritual perspective. You know, you could have people who act like demons in political power. So when you call an alien a demon, no, I think it's too much of a blanket term. Would there be aliens out there that would have an evil characteristic and would have a negative effect on humanity? Yes, I do believe that. But no, I don't think they're demons. What else you got?
Alexandria 279B. Is there any evidence that there has been an ET versus human skirmish on Earth, perhaps at a secret base?
Evidence? I don't know, but there's definitely stories, and I wrote a book about one such story that touched on that was sort of famous. It was the Dulce base in New Mexico.
Oh, yes.
Phil Schneider. It was. It occurred in 1979. And apparently some 50 contractors were killed in the skirmish between tall, big-nosed grays, as they were called. They were building an underground base and accidentally they hit a wall and broke through to a pre-existing alien base, was the story.
Right.
And that it just stunk to high heaven. The stench was just unreal, and that because they stink, these aliens, apparently. And there was a battle there, and humans died, and he was rescued by a worker who was killed. Like, he was shoved into an elevator, like a hoist of some kind, and evacuated while the person who put him in there got killed.
Amazing. Yeah.
True? I don't know. You know, whatever. These are legends. I'm not, you know.
It is. It's the ultimate urban legend is the Dulce case. But I do feel that we've had, you know, UFOs. There's great information that UFOs have approached nuclear bases. Of course, the Rendlesham case is like that. Those are substantial witnesses. And I think that they've looked into shutting off those nuclear weapons. And we've seen that that has happened in different reports. There's no question they take a great interest in our nuclear facilities. And you have to wonder why.
And to the silos where they have the, was it Minot in South Dakota? They were.
Yes, right. Yeah, that's a crazy one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Okay, Alexandra, this one's for you from Mike Humphreys. What do you think about the portal stuff now?
Portal stuff now.
There is all this stuff going on about portals that they're bringing up. Let's start with this. Inside of this DeLong thing, by the way, portals, let's not let them appropriate the term. Okay. Portals, as we know, everything from, you know, the lights in the Brown Hills in North Carolina, there's always been these stories about different portals. And certainly there are stories of portals where alien ships come through. Now, I think as part of the comic book style thing that the CIA is doing, they're coming forward with a documentary post the DeLong thing as part of this rolling idea to try to get the CIA in the hero spot for the UFO part. Grant Cameron has said that the thing that they're going to focus on is this story about portals and, you know, jump portals and all these types of things that these craft come through, and they're almost like wormhole type things. So this is what he's referring to.
So I'm sorry. I'm not up on the portals now, like portals back in the day, maybe, but
yeah, it is good. And I think real portals are good. CIA portals lend itself to the comic book. What else you got?
Someone was asking a question about George Knapp and his relationship with Bigelow, and if you could go into that.
Yeah, well, I did bring up Knapp in my New Year's broadcast, and I do think it's significant because Knapp, this is a weird thing. They have talking points now with Knapp and Leslie Kane. And Knapp and Leslie Kane are two of the best journalists on the UFO side that you can get. However, because they are associated so closely with the DeLong thing, it's getting very fuzzy in terms of their obligations. And one of the things I said I thought would be healthy would be to disclose if DeLong had any kind of financial relationship with George Knapp or Leslie Kane, just for the purpose of being transparent, not saying it would be a bad thing if he hired them for any consulting or whatever. But we ought to know that if they're going to write stories and do radio shows with them. So Knapp and Bigelow are incredibly tight. And, you know, I don't think they've made any secret about that. And Bigelow is Bigelow Aerospace, and Knapp is the local Las Vegas newsman, so it makes sense. I do think that Knapp gave so much of the story that they had to really kind of adopt Knapp for this story to make it stick. And figures like Harry Reid in Las Vegas, also close with Knapp, DeLong being close with Knapp. You know, you never get objectivity if you're working, if those people are your friends, because if in your article or if in your TV show you say something negative about them, you'll never live it down with your friend. So it's very difficult to cover a friend. So therefore, I feel like the reporting that gets done by Kane and Knapp has a slant to it, which isn't, you know, 20 years ago, Knapp was doing Bob Lazar and it was sharp, you know, it was bringing things home and to the point. And now, when Knapp was interviewed recently, he wouldn't even say if the Lazar story contained any ETs, which it clearly did. So I don't know. There was another thing too, I have to mention this, which is when Leslie Kane was in her interview, they gave her a clear shot in CNN and they said, are we talking about aliens here? And she said, no, we're talking about aerial phenomena. But we know that, you know, she's Bud Hopkins' partner for how many years? And his whole thing, what do we know about Bud Hopkins, Alexandra?
Well, that he was a modern artist. I mean, I don't know where you're going with this. I met him.
No, but yeah, he was a great artist. But all we know that he was the king of
abductions.
Yes, alien abductions. So if Leslie Kane, you know, was with him for 15 years, and if she's done books on UFOs, why suddenly can't she talk about aliens? The same way Knapp can't suddenly talk about aliens. They can only, in relation to this story, they can only talk about aerial phenomena. Sounds like talking points coming down from...
Oh, yeah, well, and then the renaming of UFOs to, you know, unidentified phenomena. Because what that sort of does is it removes aliens a little bit. It makes the whole craft be a phenomenon.
Yes, right, exactly. UAP IP is like a weird thing to rebrand it. And this is a thing that Hillary Clinton really wanted to put out there. You know, she wanted to put out there the fact that she knew this groovy new term, and like Tom DeLonge was going to be her thing, apparently, for doing it. They thought they were going to do this release of information
as the president. From
that group. Yeah. And who was in that group? Podesta was in that group. Apparently Harry Reid was in that group. We didn't know that. I mean, you really want Podesta and Harry Reid running your UFO disclosure with the CIA? Doesn't sound like a good plan to me. So I'd say more hard edge reporting. My message for UFO researchers: get your guts back on, get your intellectual rigor back on, go back there and be the kind of journalist that inspired people like me to get into this, because you've got all the knowledge. Don't fall for the money. Don't fall for the influence. Don't fall for the trap. Get to the truth about UFOs. You were doing a good job before these people came along. What else you got?
Okay.
And by the way, I love George Knapp and Leslie Kane's work. They've done great work for years and are great inspirations. Go ahead.
Okay. Boondock Berto, thank you for your relaxed format discussion. You two have me at full attention. Live is the way to go. Do you have a Steemit account?
You know, it's fascinating. Steemit, we keep hearing a lot about, and we're going to research it more for 2018. Right now, we don't.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, what a lot of people have been doing to work around the tyranny of Google, YouTube. And Steemit is interesting. It's just more work. You know, it's how much more work do we have?
Haven't you heard all about BitChute? That's another one.
Right.
That's not there. Yeah. So I know it is more work. I will say this, though. Ellen Astarda, she is just a terrific input on the comments. And so whatever it was she asked, if you can find it, please do.
I already have it. I copied it.
Excellent.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the statement in the article from December 17th where they talk about studying humans affected by interaction with UFOs? Great interview, and you both look terrific. Thank you.
Alexandra, that one was for you.
I don't really know the specifics of that. It's fascinating. Is this a story that's in the New York Times about humans infected by...
It is. And this is fascinating. She makes a great point, which is, for example, John Burroughs was affected by the sighting at Rendlesham Forest. And a number of things happened to him physically. And he still has a variety of physical ailments as a result of that. And it was in these records that they released from the MOD. And this is a story that you can really follow up on with Linda Moulton Howe's work with John Burroughs. But that was the first official acknowledgement that there was a kind of a bad effect from being in the presence of these
objects. There's the Carla Turner story where I think her whole family got cancer.
Oh,
it really sounded like irradiation. It was like, it sounded like that whole story was, it was a
myelin.
Yeah, it was exactly. It was.
It is fascinating. I will say this in relation to it. When they mentioned that in the article, they touched on it. And I do feel that they could take that right out of the records. They lift that right out of the records, you know, that they study these people who were close by to these objects. Betty and Barney Hill, you know, when they came out with this story, the Air Force wanted to talk to them, lickety-split. And, you know, this is the kind of thing. People who get involved with aliens, to get under this kind of watch list by the Air Force and by, you know, military intelligence, because they want to know everything they can about UFOs. So those people who've had those encounters very often will have these different things, whether it's Men in Black or whatever. It is very important to see what types of effects that happen. But I feel like it's almost like, you know, you don't want these government people tracking you for the rest of your life because you had one encounter with an alien.
Okay. Cool Hand Luke, DJ and Alexandra, where in the USA is the best place to go hang out and watch for aliens, UFOs, etc.?
Well, according to Ben Mesrick, who is the guy who wrote the book that became The Social Network about Facebook, the early days of Facebook, I just ran a clip with him. It was a TEDx that he did last December of 2016. And a very unlikely person to be talking about UFOs, but he got the bug. And I learned something new that I hadn't known, and that's where I heard about the FAA manual directing pilots to contact Bigelow Airspace with their UFO encounters. But what he said is that the 37th parallel that runs across, at least in the U.S., it might be globally, I'm not sure, but certainly in the U.S., it's where the Pentagon is, It's where Area 51 is. It's where I think Cheyenne Mountain is. It's where all the main underground bases are. And he says where most of the cattle mutilations are and most of the UFO sightings is along the 37th parallel.
Wow. Yeah, that's fascinating. My answer on this is interesting. There's a book, a little known book, called Common Sense Approach to UFOs by Betty Hill years later after Barney died. And people don't know that she had sightings for the rest of her life. They just think of that one incident. But she had a lifelong relationship to these sightings. And there's something in that book that will probably give you your answer. So if you can get your hands on it, go for it.
Someone asked about Brazil being a wonderful place to see UFOs.
Yes, I saw UFOs there several times.
You know what I've heard about that is that what happens is America's defenses are so built up against UFOs that they can operate much more freely in South America. So that's what they do. And that's why we're seeing a rise in sightings in South America. There always have been a lot. But in America, the sighting level has gone down.
That's interesting. Yeah, Brazil has always been, I think, the second most, you know, viewed amount of UFO sightings reported.
You saw a UFO in Brazil?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The first one I saw was, you know, the most mind-blowing experience. It was in one of the biggest cities in the world, in the Western Hemisphere. This thing, you know, it came down and was, you know, over the city. And that it wasn't front page news or on TV, I knew immediately that everything was a lie. You know, because the most completely jaw-dropping, amazing thing that I had ever seen, and I was with my neighbor, and that I did hear from somebody at school, their mother had seen it from the other side of town, 20 miles away, saw the same thing. So I know that it happened and that I wasn't dreaming, you know?
Wow. It's a great story. That story has always freaked me out because the parents fell asleep. That's what always. All right. Now we're going to end this. We're going to take two more questions. You find the best you got. Thank you. By the way, the questions have been terrific tonight. So thank you, everyone.
Doesn't Bigelow own Skinwalker Ranch?
He does. Yes. That was an easy one, but yeah.
Yes.
And he also almost owned, you could say he owned MUFON because he was the main money behind that. And now what they figured out is that the Harry Reid money that got funneled to Bigelow is what he bought into MUFON with. So that's very tricky stuff. And he actually took those, you know, people are thinking they're submitting reports to MUFON and then Bigelow's shucking them into this government project. I think it should be investigated. I really do. And I do not feel comfortable with Reid running that. And I call for an investigation of the Harry Reid, Robert Bigelow UFO, disclosure program for AATIP. And I'd like to see some of those guys answer some things for real. What else you got?
Okay, hang on. Okay, Dave Hightower, did we land on the moon or was the moon landing all fake?
I have a very interesting show coming up with Joseph Farrell about the moon. And you want to take this one, Alexander?
No, go ahead.
Well, I would say this. I think that the technology that we used to get there is what the real mystery is. It's not the mystery that we went there. However, there's so many anomalies around the moon landings that I understand why people would have incredible doubts about it. And certainly we never got the real story about it. And a lot of the technology that we used to get there, supposedly it was, you know, we didn't even know what happened to it. And then the films got lost. I mean, it's too mysterious. So there's certainly incredible lack of clarity. And then just a few years later, the space program goes kaput.
Right. There's a lot of evidence for fakery in the images that we have. There's definitely evidence for fakery.
And when they,
doesn't necessarily mean we didn't go, you know, so
yes,
we didn't do anything. But
there's an incredible shot in Diamonds Are Forever where he's chasing this villain and he accidentally runs into this weird scene of them filming the moon landing. So I think they were giving some messaging out there. It's a great scene in a great movie. Somebody says, Robert Dean, is he CIA? He admits to being CIA. So yeah, the answer there is yes. And what else you got? Olivia, by the way, incredible questions. What a great job.
I want to ask everybody if they can ask their questions in caps. So it's much easier for me to read.
That's indeed
really helpful. Oh, God.
I'll tell you what we'll do with time. It's 8:53. We're going to end the chat at 9. So it gives us 7 minutes to answer the rest of them. Seems pretty fair. By the way, I want to say this. Everyone should go to darkjournalist.com to get the free newsletter so that you're updated on all the shows that we have coming up and all the events. And you get a live show schedule there too. So make sure that you do that. Also, like the video, you know, hit like, whatever it happens to be, you know, show that interaction. And visit ForbiddenKnowledgeTV.net, which is Alexander's site. Sign up for the newsletter. That's free. The newsletter is free. You're going to get those stories in your inbox, the kind of stuff that you need to follow. So make sure you do that. Okay, what do you got?
Okay, Catherine Woodman says, William Tompkins said, we landed on the moon and the reptilians were there surrounding the crater.
That's interesting. Something was in that crater. I think that that's true. I don't have any idea what was in there, but... I do think that's interesting. And who did they say it was? Catherine who?
Catherine Woodman asked the question.
No, but who is she? Oh,
William Tompkins. Did we land it on?
Oh, William Tompkins. I see. Yeah, Tompkins. Tompkins passed away. And if you want information on Tompkins, his interview with Carrie Cassidy was where he spilled his guts. I never got into the material.
There's a lot of questions about this. The Mount Adams sightings. Do you know about these?
Mount Adams sightings. It's not ringing a bell right now, so I think we better move on for time.
Okay. I'm waiting for some questions.
Oh, this is it. No, this is good. No, this is perfect. Thank you, everyone. somebody asked something there about Flat Earth. Live feeds from the ISS CGI green screens, or is that fodder for Flat Earth? No, I think that they certainly do employ some video trickery in things like that.
And yeah, I was saying, yeah, NASA is more like a CGI company.
That's right. We had that conversation just before we went live. Yeah. Wow, amazing conversation. We went through the UFO Mandela effect. We went into Bitcoin. We went into Q. Just a fantastic round circle of facts. And we're looking forward to an incredible 2018. We're going to come back next week with Alexandra Bruce. And do another live show covering everything that's happening. I have new episodes with Joseph Farrell and Catherine Austin Fitz coming up in the next 2 weeks. And we really appreciate you guys being on board. And make sure that you stay tuned, like I said, to the newsletter, because you'll get those live schedules. So it's a pleasure being with you. And there's so many things going on. I think we are under a big surge of disinformation. And the best way to battle that is not to rage on against the disinformation, is to be very well informed ourselves. And that's hopefully the kind of thing that we can give you. Olivia, parting shot.
Well, this is a fun one.
You get a smile.
You know what Mount Adams is. You just don't want to answer because it supports Jimmy Church and Corey Good Group.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. So are you saying, ask that person, whoever it was, is that Gilliland Ranch and there's like a doorway in the mountain or something? Yeah, that's probably what it is.
Yes, yeah. It's yes here. Oh, maybe it's Mount Abrams.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think that you're right. I don't want to support Jimmy Church or Corey Good. That's pretty.
Well, it's not even. Because I don't watch or participate. That's why I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. It's a lot of you know that stuff. But I will say this: there's so many good cases to track down and. You know, I think the people who are looking for good information on UFOs, you know, we've had incredible information and research done by people like John Mack, people like Linda Moulton Howe. These are great people that are in the field, and I would always start with their work. That's where you want to go because there's only so much time in a day. And, you know, when people start calling themselves ambassadors to galactic federations and stuff, I stop tuning in. So, but I am glad that you all tuned in and we've had a great show tonight. There's lots of people out there who, you know, I've seen, like, we're really glad to get these repeat commenters and fans of Dark Journalists. Really appreciate your input. So we'll see you next week. And, Stay tuned. Watch for Alexandra. Of course, Alexandra, it's really great to have you tonight. And boy, the way you're on fire.
Likewise, fun. I'm looking forward to 2018. Finally, I feel good about 2018.
I think it's good numerology for you. How about that?
hold on. Oh. When will DJ interview Walter Bosley?
Hey, you know, I got to tell you, that is coming up. That's going to come up soon. And
it's funny. You should. We both should, actually. He's hilarious.
Yeah, well, you know Boss Bosley. Of course, he was there with us at the Secret Space Program Conference in 2015 before all the craziness happened and these other people ran away with legitimate UFO research.
Wow. I've known him for years, and he's friends with friends of mine in Los Angeles, so
He's a friend of a friend. Now, I talk to him fairly regularly. We're on Facebook with each other, and we did talk about it. In fact, there was a show that was set up that we're going to talk to him about his Empire of the Wheel series, which is fascinating. And he does great work, and certainly he's going to be on in 2018. I don't know when, but we're going to make it that happen. I will say, as far as guests go, I love guest suggestions. Somebody else said Judy Wood in there, and you know, Judy Wood is fascinating, and her work has been fascinating. And we've touched base over time. We've never set up a show or anything like that, but certainly I think her work is fascinating. Yes. Is that Alison Goodwin? It's in Indonesia. What's in Indonesia? Is Mount Adams? Walter will be on my show, Knox. Oh, Knox Mente. You're the guy who does the Sleep Dreams show. Jerry, yes. Very interesting. I think talking to people about their dreams is fascinating. I study dreams a lot. I try to keep a dream journal. I think that's really valuable stuff. And, you know, I definitely think that there's something to the science of dreaming. And so any shows that promote it, I think are good. All right. So we had a great night. Great conversation. Olivia, thank you.
It was an honor.
And Alexandra, what can I say? Incredible. So we'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye. Right. Thanks, Olivia.
Nice being on with you.
Bye. Wow, incredible.